as a black man in East Tennessee, you don't go to therapy. You don't talk about your feelings. You try to hide that, and you got to be strong. But the moment when I realized is being strong is being vulnerable, right? Being strong is showing your emotions. Being strong is sitting in a session and crying and getting all those emotions out. Once I started doing that and started diving into the roots, that's when I truly started loving myself.
That is Blake Leeper, a sprinter and two-time Paralympic medalist. I'm Natalia Diane. From birth, Blake Leeper has been battling and overcoming one obstacle after the next. He was born with fibular hemimelia, meaning his legs did not develop in the womb. Doctors told his parents he will never be able to walk. But Blake had other plans, pursuing sport, first to fit in, and eventually to stand in the spotlight. While on a quest to become one of the fastest men in the world, Blake struggled with the pressure and turned to substance abuse. As a result, he endured a 2-year suspension from competing. When Blake returned to competition, racing against able-bodied athletes, he was told his running blades gave him a competitive advantage. Now, racing on shorter blades, Blake has essentially learned to run all over again as he trains to make a comeback on the world stage. Throughout all the adversity, Blake has confronted his mental health head-on, building a toolkit to help him embrace and overcome whatever comes his way. He is here to share his extraordinary story. You know, in getting to know your story, one of the things that's like really striking for me is your energy for taking on challenge after challenge. And we'll talk about those more specifically. But to start, I'm wondering what you want to share, what you can tell us about what your life was like when you were a kid and who taught you to be so determined.
Yeah. I like to hit on what you said is just energy. Like I'm a true believer of energy, and I'm a true believer of positive energy. And you know, it stems back when I was a little boy, you know, growing up in East Tennessee, born with a congenital birth defect, fibular hemimelia. So my legs didn't develop in the womb, and I came out as a disabled child. Doctors told my parents from day one. When I was in the NICU, they came back and had that conversation with my mother and father. You know, Mr. and Mrs. Leeper, I'm sorry, but your baby boy Blake was born missing both of his legs. You know, I'm sorry, but he's never gonna walk. He's never gonna play. He's never gonna jump. He's never gonna be able to run. And I can only imagine, like, you know, the sadness. You know, I'm a new father myself, so I have a 2-year-old. At home, and for those who can't see, I got the eye bags under my eyes. I'm so tired, but I just think about the day that my daughter was born, and I didn't care, you know, is she a boy or is she a girl? Is she none of that stuff matters in the moment. I want a healthy baby, and I was fortunate enough to have a healthy baby. But I think about my parents and what they went through when the doctors come in with this tragic news saying, you know, your son's never going to walk. He's going to be in a wheelchair, you know, most of his life. He'll never be able to move. And it was turned to a sad scene. And so when you talk about energy, you know, I asked my parents, you know, like, what'd you do in that moment? Like, what'd you say? You know, mom, dad, who'd you cuss out, right? But they emphasize the type of energy they brought into the moment. They said, yes, that we was nervous and we was scared, but the day that she was born, we didn't see the fact that of the things that she was missing, the fact that she was missing your legs. The second they brought you into the room, we seen the beauty inside of you, right? And we decided in that moment to bring positive energy, you know, stick together as a family, as a unit, through the good and the bad and the ugly. We're going to be in your corner supporting you and fighting for you and with you.
Other things that I've heard you talk about being a kid and getting picked on or laughed at or being chosen last for sports or even your prosthetics falling off while you were competing. And I'm wondering, how did you manage to always push forward without feeling overcome by the isolation? And if you did feel isolated or lonely, what were your outlets to express yourself?
You talked about the time, you know, my leg fell off. I was playing T-ball. And in that moment, I wanted to hit a home run for, like, to fit in, you know, for people to cheer for me. And, you know, my dad was a third base coach. So you have to understand, they not only told me that I would never, you know, move or play sports, but they told him. that I'll never walk or play sports. So I wanted to do it for like for us to show the, you know, the doctors in the world that they was wrong. And you know, I go up to the plate and I take my three practice swings and I hit the ball as far as I can and the ball starts flying. Like I get so excited, I forget to run. I'm just like staring at this ball that I'm like, this is the moment I'm waiting for. It's going to be a home run. Then I start running and on my way to first, you know, to second, I see everybody in there at the field cheering me on, my friends and my family, my teammates. Then I look over to my father, he's jumping up and down and he's all excited. Like, this is the moment. But on my way to second to third, my leg falls off. Boop. And like I fall down, I eat dirt. The kid comes over and he tags me out. I don't know why he would tag me out in that moment. You would think he would just like let me go on, but it's a tough league. It's a tough league. But even at a young age, as I laid there with one leg on, one leg off, I was trying to figure it out. Like why me? Like, why am I going through this? Like, I'm the only one that's missing his legs. Like, why? Like, the only thing I wanted to do, I wasn't trying to do anything bad. I was actually trying to do something good. And like, I was trying to make my dad proud. I was trying to fit in. And in that moment, you know, my dad ran over and put my leg on me. And my teammates came over and dusted the dirt off of me. And but more trials and tribulations that I went through in my life, I realized in that moment when I was like, I was looking for fault. I wanted to blame somebody, right? But I realized that it was nobody's fault in that moment. That the fact that I just came up short and I failed and I fell down, my leg fell off, that's part of life. Like that is life. And sometimes life is tough. And sometimes life is hard. And sometimes life isn't fair. But one thing I did realize, the one thing I did have control over, right? I didn't have control over how things were dealt in my situation. But one thing I did have control over is how I respond to life. It's my responsibility to figure it out.
One part of your story that I think really is really interesting here is that in college, you were really determined to become a doctor.
Yes.
But then you decided instead to dedicate yourself to track, which I think it's really interesting because then it shifts the focus to be fully on your body and fully on your legs.
Yes.
So how did getting involved with track change the way that you saw yourself?
It was amazing. You know, it's crazy to think there was days I was like, you know, in middle school, going into high school, around 11, 12, 13 years old. And I would have, you know, these deep, you know, very specific dreams and visions in my soul, in my spirit, in my body, in my mind of me, you know, being in front of in a stadium of thousands of people, right? And they was, you know, applauding me and cheering for me. And I was accepting the applauses, but I didn't know what I was doing, how I got there. I just felt the crowd and the audience. But I was pursuing the medical career because in a sense that was the safe route for me. Right? I knew that I wouldn't have to use my body as much and I knew I could use my mind. But it was in 2008 when I was like, you know, coming home from a chemistry class and I was, you know, on the college diet, eat my bowl of Fruit Loops. And the 2008 Paralympic Games came on ESPN and it was in a bird's nest in front of 90,000 people cheering for disabled men and women. And I was like, I dropped my bowl of Fruit Loops in just awe, like in amaze, like, oh my goodness, this. Like I felt it in my soul. I felt it in my gut. And that might happen sometimes that you can be on a path and you could be all in on this path and you think this is the right path for you, but something in your life comes to you that just inspires you so much, right? And it could be so random and it may not line up with what your thought process of what you had planned in your life, but what it makes you feel inside just is something special. Right. And when I seen these men and women run on prosthetic legs in front of 90,000 people, oh, something inside of me just like arose and I woke up and I was like, that's what I want to do. Like, no, I don't want to be a doctor no more. Like, I want to be a runner. Like, that's exactly what I want to do. And once that came with inside of me, I just completely changed my whole journey and went on this mission to become a professional runner, a Paralympic champion, and one of the fastest men in the world.
Wow. That's such a fascinating, fascinating moment in life, right? To see that and representation is so important, right? Seeing yourself, seeing someone ask yourself doing that and then saying, oh, I can do that.
I remember like that first time putting my legs on. You have to understand, I was wearing a certain pair of prosthetic legs that only allowed me to run so fast my whole life. So I've never been able to sprint. I've never been able to run at a high level with the way the wind was hitting my face. And when I first put them on, they was telling me, like, you might fall. It's not going to go that well. Don't get discouraged. I'm just like, give me my legs. I want them. And I put them on and I start walking. And within 10 steps, I'm sprinting on my legs. And at almost 19, 20 years old, that's the fastest I ever ran in my life. And the way the wind was hitting my face, I felt free. Like nothing in that moment mattered. The fact that I was missing my legs, the fact that I was disabled, you know, all the hardship that I endured or went through in my life, like that was just like, I just like felt so free and just felt just like, this is what I was meant to do, was to run really, really fast.
Your track career got off to an incredible start when you started. You had, you know, Paralympic medals, record times, and you were also dealing with substance abuse issues at the time. I would love it if you can share some of that story and what impact did this have on your mental health?
Yes, you know, then that's where I hit, you know, the next phase in my life. You know, I overcame, you know, being born without legs, and I overcame, you know, the adversity and the challenges of being a disabled man. And I was I thought I was in a great position, you know, on paper and career wise. I had medals, I had American records, I was sponsored by, you know, 4, 5, 6 different companies. You know, I was doing commercials and everybody thought I was happy, but on the inside, I was suffering. On the inside, because I wasn't happy, because I didn't deal with, you know, some of all the challenges that I was facing, especially with substance abuse and that inner peace. And I was I found myself trying to please everybody and wear this cape of trying to be a superhero. And I was trying to take care of everybody else. And in that process of trying to take care of everybody else, I forgot to take care of myself. I forgot to ask myself the right questions if I'm okay. And in that process of trying to please everybody, I lost myself. And on that journey, I hit my rock bottom. You know, even though I was performing, you know, I was a functioning alcoholic. I was drinking daily. I was partying a lot. I was hanging out with the wrong people. I would go do events, do parties, but I didn't have the tools to handle hard pressure situations, right? And high level situations. I didn't have the tools to go through hardship and tough times to say no. Like, hey, I need a break right now. Like, no, I need a rest right now. And it was in 2015, I went to Paralympic Nationals and I broke the American record. And then a couple weeks later, I found out I tested positive for cocaine, for a non-performing enhancing drug, a party drug that I was partying the week before, where it was, should have been an easy decision to say, no, guys, I don't need to be in this situation. But, you know, my way my brain was thinking and way I in my thought process, I couldn't say no, right? And I have that mentality, like, one is not enough. I gotta keep going. I need more. So here I was. Wow, I'll never forget this moment. It was in 2015. I was on my way to World Championships. I was ranked number one in the world at the time, and I just been told that I can't run. Oh, it was and people don't realize, like, I even lost my leg sponsor. So when I lost my leg sponsor, I lost my legs. They didn't want to, you know, sponsor my legs, so I had to go into my closet because I was about to re-up for some new legs, and I couldn't get the legs, so I had to go into my closet and like duct tape my legs together. And now, on top of, you know, being at my rock bottom in my life, but what I realized through this process, right? I got to work on myself. I got a therapist and I started working through my issues, and you know, I started a 12-step program and I started working on myself, and the beautiful part, I've started learning so much about stuff that I used to bury and hide and not talk about. As a black man in East Tennessee, you don't go to therapy. You don't cry. You don't talk about your emotions. You don't talk about your feelings. You try to hide that, and you got to be strong. But the moment when I realized is being strong is being vulnerable, right? Being strong is showing your emotions. Being strong is sitting in a session and crying and getting all those emotions out. Once I started doing that and started diving into the roots, that's when I truly started loving myself. And I realized the only way I want to get to being the best version of myself, whether it's on and off the track, I got to love myself for everything. And once I started doing that, I started building myself back up. I started gaining the strength. I started loving myself. I started getting back on the track. I started running faster. And I never forget, I was about a year into my program, and I was a year into, getting back on the track. I had a drug test 3 times a week to even have the opportunity to get back on the track again. And I qualified for the, 2016, Paralympic Games. I break a national record. But the international committee didn't accept my sanction, so they gave me another year after that. I was clean, I was sober, I did everything, I passed every drug test, but they's like, nope, you still need one more year. And here I was, watching my teammates, even though I qualified for the Paralympic Games, and watching them walk into that open ceremony. And I thought I did everything right, even though I was self-inflicted and I made the mistake, but I thought I did everything right moving forward. And as I was sitting there, I had a realization, like, I could quit right now. I could walk away. And people would understand, like, man, you gave it all you got and you're still not here. Like, but I was like, if I do that, then they have truly won. And even though going through my addiction and getting my life back on track, it's a little bit different than being born without legs, right? But it took the same characteristics to overcome that adversity. It took the same characteristics that I learned in that moment when I fell down and my leg fell off. Those same characteristics that I told myself to get back up, to be positive, to have the determination, to not give up. Then I also asked myself, how bad do you want it, Blake? How bad do you want it? And why is it so important to you? But once I went through this hardship in my life and I hit my rock bottom to rebuild myself back up, I made the decision, like, this is my life. Running and competing and going out there to try to be the fastest person the best version of myself is my life. And I'm going to dedicate my life to figure out how good I truly can be. And once I made that decision and went through that, I would say some of the most amazing things in my life happened. The next year in 2017, I came out and I broke the world record in the 400 meters. I actually broke Oscar Pistorius' world record. I qualified. I became 12th in the nation that year. The next year, I broke my own world record. And I was the first amputee ever to run 44 seconds in the 400 meters. I ran 44:42, and I was the eighth fastest person in the world, legs or no legs. And the year after that, in 2019, I broke my world record again and ran 44:38, and I took fifth in the nation at USATF National Championships, and was the fifth fastest runner in the nation. I qualified for world championships, and then this is against the fastest runners in the world, legs, no legs, it doesn't matter, like, who you are, your situation. I try to explain to people, and I qualified for the Olympics with that time, with a 44:38 hitting Olympic qualifying standard. I was in the final, and I never, ever would have been in that situation if I didn't go through what I went through.
It sounds like that rock bottom sort of became your launching pad, right, to this other greatness that you were able to then set your mind to get. You gained some clarity during that time, yes, to then pursue and become, like you said, the best version that of yourself, both on the track but also on your mental health, right? And you talked about seeking therapy. I find it always really helpful if you want to share a little bit more about what was that process like for seeking help, right, with the stigma, with maybe if you're, there's so much stigma around mental health and looking for help and seeking help and treatment. So if you can tell us a little bit more about that, we would love to hear about that.
I was embarrassed, right? Seeking out the help. And I was forced into a situation where I was forced myself into help would save my life. But if I just took the moment to seek help before then I probably wouldn't have endured so much hardship, you know, moving forward. And the reality of it is, it's that moment of feeling vulnerable, right? You know, sitting in that chair and just that vulnerability of looking somebody in the eyes and saying, I'm not okay. Right. And I was faking it the whole time. Like, I'm fine. Don't worry. Like, I overcame this situation. But the reality of it is, it's okay not to be okay. And once I realized that, and once I was able to voice that, like, hey, I'm not okay today, that's when I can start getting help.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about was, when you came back to racing in 2017 after your suspension, and you did so running against able-bodied athletes. And I would love to know more about the ways that you train during your suspension that not only gave you that mental strength to come back to the track, but to come back with this new ambition.
Yeah, it was a process. It was some tough days. You know, I think about like the day where, you know, they told me that I'm sorry. Like, they first originally told me I could go to Rio in 2016, but then, you know, I found out days before Elite flying out to Brazil that I couldn't go. And I was actually in San Diego going through team processing. And then once they told me, I drove back from San Diego to LA. I cried the whole way home. I called my brother and I talked to him for a little bit, and I was thinking about, man, I'm gonna quit. This is ridiculous. All these things still went through my head. Like, just because I continued the fight doesn't mean I wasn't going through all this. And this is the beautiful part about therapy, having those tools. And I go to practice the next day, and mind you, the season is done, right? There's no more races of the year. And I learned something so valuable from my coach in this moment, right? So I get the decision. My coach is like, meet me at the track the next day. And I was like, all right, this is weird that the season's over, there's no more races. Maybe he just wants to, you know, take a couple laps with me, encourage me, talk to me to get ready for next season. So we get to the track. He said, okay, we have 6 300s. Let's go. Do your warm up. And I was like, kind of confused. Like, what are you talking, coach? What are you talking about? Like, see, the season's over. Like, did you not hear? They're not letting me run this year. Like, this is stupid. Even though I did everything right, they're not letting me run. He's like, I don't care. He's like, you're not running for them. You're running for yourself. Get out there and do your workout. You're going to be able to run next year, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, are you done running for life? I was like, no. He said, okay, let's do this. 6 300s. Let's go. I put my legs on and I'm like doing my warm up, and I'm just like, it was by far the hardest workout I ever done in my life. And it taught me a valuable lesson, right? Right at your lowest point, right? Even at your lowest, when you've been told no, and we all face adversity and blowback and challenges, and, you know, whether we're fighting for that big project or that promotion or something big happens in our life and we get told no, right? Your next move right after that is one of your most important moves. What you do immediately after that is going to set your trajectory up moving forward, right, on how you're going to accomplish your next mission.
Yeah. And you continue to fight, right? Because you have spent years dealing with governing bodies in your sport who have made rulings not allowing you to race against able-bodied athletes because of various factors concerning your running blades. And they have determined that you have a competitive advantage. And I know you have appealed these decisions. But how do you take care of your mental health while you're also pursuing justice and equality and doing this immense work?
Yeah, you know, I get my life back on track and I fight so hard to get back to compete, to be the best version of myself. And once I figured out the best version of myself, actually could be the fastest man in the world, can qualify for the Olympics. Right, the best version of myself can get me on a relay team. The best version of myself I can make finals in the Olympic Games. Like, how amazing and how this is where it was supposed to be. Like this is why I went through what I went through. Then I finally get to the end, and the committee says, no, you have an unfair advantage. And I was confused. I'm like, wait, you talking about the guy missing his, I'm missing my legs. I was born without legs. And they started putting these parameters and all these different, you know, formulas and telling me how tall I should be and explaining my unfair advantage that I gained against able-bodied competitors. And even though I don't agree with it, and even though I feel like I should have been able to run in the 2021, you know, Olympic Games, like my 44.3 that I mentioned qualified me for Olympic trials. So I was supposed to run in the Olympic trials, and I really felt like I would have made the Olympic team and competed and qualified for the Olympic Games. And unfortunately, that did not happen because they felt like me, the disabled man, had an unfair advantage against the fastest runners in the world. Here we go again, right? I've been told no once again. But here's the beautiful part about life that I realized, because I was sitting in my court case and they were telling me all the different type of advantages that I have against able-bodied competitors and men that had both of their legs, and all the stuff that they was identifying, I was just disagreeing with just completely. But I realized one thing. I was like, wow, I do have an advantage, right? But it has nothing to do with the fact that it's the blades and prosthetic legs. The advantage that I have is my adversity, right? The advantage that I have is the fact that I was born without legs, and I had to figure this out at an early age. The fact that I was born less than, and I was told no from day one, and I had to understand and deal with life and ask those hard questions when I was 4 years old, and ask those hard questions when I was in middle school, and understand that I had to gain these hard tools and ask myself these hard questions when I was suspended and overcome and built myself back up. These hard questions, these tools that I gained throughout my life because of my adversity is my advantage. So when I lined it up, and I was on the line with the fastest runners in the world, and they were some of the strongest men in the world, I could look at them in their eyes and have a smile on my face and say, I'm stronger than you. Like, that's my advantage. Now, I just ended up doing it on prosthetic legs, and I ended up running really, really fast, and they interpreted as that, oh, wow, it must be the blades. It has nothing to do with the blades, because the reality of it is prosthetic legs and these specific running blades have been around for over 20 years. So if it was the blades, then you would have more amputees run 44 seconds in the 400. But it's just been me. But it's because I endured the hardship and did not quit. I endured the pain and did not give up through the process, right? That's my advantage. Like, that's my advantage right there. And so as tough as that no was, right, and as hard as being denied during this process, the beautiful part about it is I had the tools. I went to therapy to understand myself, to figure myself out. So my mental health is in a good place because I've surrounded myself with the right people, and I surrounded myself with the right things, and it was an aha moment for me. When I was sitting there and their lawyers were like scrambling around and they're like, they're fighting, they're sweating and they're bringing in these expert witnesses and trying to explain to the committee why I have the unfair advantage. And a part of me was just smiling and just laughing because I was thinking about the day that I was born and how they told me I would never even walk. It's been a journey, and so the final decision why they felt like I gained an unfair advantage was they said I was too tall in my running legs, and that because I could manipulate my height, that I gained an unfair advantage running on my prosthetic legs. Now, I run at 6'2", my wingspan is 6'1", so it wasn't like I was out there running on stilts at 7 foot tall. The average the average 400 meter runner, which my lawyers and scientists broke it down, the average height is 6'3", 6'2", roughly over 6 foot. So I was within the parameters of my competitors, but because I was disabled, they felt like that I should have been shorter. And so I had to drop my prosthetic legs almost 6 inches to retrain and to re-qualify again for the Paralympics and Olympic Games in 2024.
And that was one of my following questions, is having to essentially relearn the mechanics of running, right, with the shorter blades. What kind of toll does it take on your mental health to have to start something over again while still wanting to reach the same elite level that you had?
It was tough. I mean, this process is still tough. I'm going through it as we go through it today. You know, I'll be at the track. I'll be at the track tomorrow. I was at the track yesterday. And going through that process, it's hard. I have my good days and I have my bad days. But one thing I do have, and I always emphasize, I have my tools. I think about the time when I was suspended and I lost everything. And I was able to evaluate, like, what do I still have? And one thing I still have is the ability to run. And it's all about perspective, right? That's how I look at it. I look at the perspective and saying, wow, could it be better? Yes. Being born without legs could have been better. Yes. I could have been born with legs. But could it be worse? Absolutely. It could be worse. So I'll take what I have today. And I'm going to... After I got my decision that I couldn't run in the Olympic trials, you know what I did the next day? I went out and got my 6 inch shorter legs. And I went and trained, right? Because it has nothing to do with height. It has nothing to do. It's all about the hard work and the work effort and embracing the moment and fighting. And I'm not going to quit once again. I'm back in. I got to practice what I preach and what I'm a true believer in. If I don't give up. And if I don't quit, and if I keep pushing, then I can be just as fast. As I just got to figure it out. But one thing I cannot do is quit. I cannot stop. So that's my motivation. That's my inspiration.
Yeah, and that's talking about mindset, right? As you continue your fight to run, and with the Paris Summer Olympics coming up in 2024, how are you going to prepare yourself to get on those starting blocks, you know, both physically and mentally?
Yes, it's going to be a constant journey of consistency, right? From starting now, I think I seen a picture the other day. We're 800 days out. I have 800 days to the Paris Paralympic 2024 games. So that's 800 opportunities and chances of showing up, doing the work physically, doing the work on the track. I'm doing the work in the weight room. I'm doing the work on my diet. I'm doing the work on my mental health. I'm doing my reading. I'm doing my writing. I'm seeing my sports psychologist. I'm reaching out to individuals. I'm fighting each and every day. There's something that needs to be done every day because I want to be the best in the world. I just don't want to be the best in California. I don't want to just be the best double leg amputee. I want to be the best in the world. So when Paris comes in 800 days, I can look into the universe and I can look into that young disabled individual that's in Europe or here in America or in China or in Africa. And I can look them in the eyes and tell them to get up. Go after it. Become the best version of yourself, and not only be your best version of yourself, but you can be the best in the world regardless of your disability, regardless of where you come from. You can be the best in the world, but it starts with me being the best version of myself. And I have 800 days to for this amazing stage that's going to be set, so I'm gonna prove a lot of people wrong. I'm gonna inspire a lot of people. But most importantly, what I've learned, I'm going to put myself in a position to where I can truly love myself. I'm going to put myself in a position to win it. Whatever happens, whether I run in the Olympics, Paralympics, or even if I don't run at all, right? I know I can walk away and say, wow, Blake, you gave it your all. And almost like this moment where I can give myself a hug because I'm so proud of myself.
That was Blake Leeper. Please come back next time when my co-host, Dr. Shairi Turner, is joined by golf icon, Michelle Wee West. to talk about mental health over the course of her extraordinary and groundbreaking career. Crisis Text Line is proud to partner with Nike. We provide free 24/7 high-quality text-based mental health support and crisis intervention by empowering a community of trained volunteers to support people in their moments of need. At any time, texters in the U.S. can connect with volunteer crisis counselors by texting the word STRONG to 741-741. It's brave to reach out. This has been No Off-Season. I'm Natalia Diane. The information and opinions provided on this podcast are not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. We encourage you to speak with your doctor for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.